You're listening to the Drux Radio Show on KGO 810. Purple rain turns to purple tears today as the doves cry. May they carry the prince, and that he is the prince. The wings of an angel. This has got to be one of my favorite Prince songs. So tonight we do, and we are going to do a retrospective of Prince's life, and we'll hear from the man himself. And we'll begin with this.
I think from the beginning, as I was coming into my own persona and understanding of who I was, I never talked down to my audience. Mm-hmm. And when you don't talk down to your audience, then they can grow with you. And I give them a lot of credit to be able to hang with me this long, because I've gone through a lot of changes. But they've allowed me to grow, and thus we can tackle some serious subjects and try to just be better human beings, mm-hmm. all of us, you know.
And that was the good person that he was, the Jehovah's Witness, and just all-around great guy, and quite reclusive, as I was talking about in the conversation with Chip. And he was such a big part of my life, and I think a lot of people's, even if it was in the background, he was such a powerhouse. Today, as I was going to the eye doctor, I was listening to Ron Owens, and I heard Brett break the news to Ron Owens, and it's one of those moments. You'll remember when and where you were. And it just reminded me of how mortal we all are, and how sorely, once again, another icon has fallen way too soon.
It's been a heavy year.
It has been. We're not even halfway through it. Prince, a wildly prolific songwriter, I mean, virtuoso of all these instruments, keyboards, drums. I look at him as like the architect of funk, rock, R&B, and pop. He just crossed all of those. Everybody's throwing around the you know, defied genres, but that's really today what I think he was. So I will open up the phones, and where were you today? What were you thinking when you heard the news? Once again, the day the music died. 808-0810 is the number. And the bourgeoisie, he just put up a new song last night. He posted this.
Does erase and blaze the memory. Slippery lips of the bourgeoisie. Everybody step right up and come and see. The bearded lady, take me up to G.
Bourgeoisie, I mean, it is a reference to materialistic values, conventional attitudes, and I think the prince broke all of those. And was it an omen that he knew that his life was ending? Perhaps. Perhaps we will find out in days to come. Because over the weekend, he did a concert at Paisley Park near his home, and he said, wait a few days before you waste any prayers. Wow, and a few days later, the day is today. And as we reflect on Prince, the next question that he was asked is, when it comes to his concerts, and he loved doing these concerts, and again, I just give him so much credit for not getting sucked into the machine. He really didn't. And there were struggles. He had big-time fights with the machine, especially Warner Brothers. We'll get to that coming up. But, you know, his concerts just a couple weeks ago in Oakland. Were you there? Oh, please call me. 415-808-0810. And then he would always roll out and do the nightclub. He did the nightclub scene down here in San Francisco. And when he did his concerts, he didn't always just play his greatest hits like a lot of artists. And he was asked about that.
Yeah, a lot of the people that come see us now, their parents listened to real music, mm-hmm. real songwriting, real musicianship, and they respect somebody who takes their craft seriously. And I grew up that way, so I, you know, when we do our shows, I try to have the best musicians I can find mm-hmm. with me at that particular time. And like I said, we don't play down to them. We don't, you know, we're just not, it's just not about a party, you know. That's going to be anyway, if it's good music. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to challenge them. And I think that's lacking in music mm-hmm. today.
Right, and so he would do that. And if you saw the concert, I'm sure he didn't just play all of his greatest hits, or maybe he did here in Oakland. And you got to wonder, if you were there or you had friends who were there at that scene, boy, I mean, it was just recently. Did you think something was up, something was going on? Let's go to the phone, and we will talk to Matt in Fairfield. Good evening. You're on the Drex Radio Show on KGO.
You know, it comes back to my mind, you know, about Michael Jackson when he passed away. You know, I was up in there in Tehachapi State Prison with Al DeBarge. He was my close friend up there. He's related to Janet Jackson. But
yes.
Other than that, you know what I'm saying? He was linked to his circle of the time. If you don't know this, he's linked with
Morris
the time.
Day and the Time.
Jesse,
yes.
Morris Day and the Time. Mm-hmm. Jesse Johnson. He was hooked up with Vanity, and that was his circle, man. They
Apollonia.
Were vicious. That was
yes.
Ready for the World.
Yes.
You know, it was that era, right?
Loved
there.
Ready for the World. And, all of those.
Yeah.
And I know, I think a lot of people, they might not know. What I didn't know is that he wrote I Feel For You by Chaka Khan. Now, I knew that he did Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You and Manic Monday
oh, yeah.
for the Bengals.
And he was, you know, he was real close to the Escovedos.
Yes.
You know, Juan Escovedo, Pete Escovedo, Sheila Escovedo out of Oakland, you know, very tight, very close to that family, you know, and I thought about them today, too, because how close they are. And I know that family.
Well, thank you very much for calling, and thank you for listening, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Ken in San Jose. Good evening. You're on KGO.
Good evening. First time caller to your show. I had a buddy that actually played in the 80s and early 90s in his house band after the show. So I have some of the old videotapes from some of those shows. But I was at the concert when he did Oakland, you know, the most recent show. And
wow.
I tried to get tickets at the Paramount, and I was bummed out I couldn't get tickets at the Paramount. But when they announced another show, I'm on my cell phone, tapping away madly, trying to get the Ticketmaster, because I told my wife, you know, I don't know how much longer he's going to be touring. This be maybe my last time to see him in concert.
And isn't that strange? I mean, how did you feel today when you heard the news? It had to be shocking.
When I first heard it, it's like 57, Prince, and at first TMZ was reporting it, but it wasn't confirmed, and I'm like, could it be somebody else, Prince? And then, you know, I saw it at work running across the ticker that CNN was reporting it. So I'm like, damn, it's real.
So what was the concert like for you? Was he playing other music other than his greatest hits?
Yeah, it was pretty incredible because it was just him and the piano. And he played old stuff, new stuff. You know, all the way back to Controversy. So he was all over the place. But it was pretty incredible that it was just him and the piano.
Yeah, that's amazing stuff.
For 2+ hours, and he did, you know, the three callbacks when he had left the stage. So it was a
Oh, I think he dropped. So, yeah, that was the most outstanding thing. Is there one song that you particularly love that he did in concert?
Not anything in particular. You know, I have some favorite Prince songs, but the whole concert was just, like I said, pretty incredible. Just him doing vocals and playing on a piano. Somebody that can do that for 2.5 hours is incredible.
A true talent. Thank you very much. And I thank you for sharing, Ken. Have a good night. A 7-time Grammy winner, he was. And when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004, he did a tribute to George Harrison that night. He went on to play a guitar solo of When My Guitar Gently Weeps. And, you know, that pretty much had the room floored, as I remember. And he said, when I first started out in the music industry, I was most concerned with freedom, the freedom to produce, the freedom to play all the instruments on my records, the freedom to say anything. And so it goes. And we'll continue our retrospective and our salute to Prince as we continue. And we'll hear from him, the man himself, as you're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. From the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, this is Prince, along with Steve Winwood, Tom Petty, and Jeff Lynne from ELO. I'm not sure who's playing the guitar here, but my God, it is Prince. I was going to say, because Prince is your Lenny Kravitz, Jimi Hendrix kind of guitar player. No wonder everybody was blown away. Boy, it just brings it back, I have to tell you. And Prince recorded the great majority of his entire music library. He played every instrument, singing on every vocal line, a lot of his... And here's the thing about Prince. Many of his albums were just simply credited, produced, arranged, and composed and performed by Prince. And he was polished. I mean, he worked as a band leader on the aesthetic tradition, I think, always of James Brown. And he was so utterly precise with everything. And he had, and you won't be surprised by this, because he did cross all the barriers. He had a sophisticated fan base from all areas, up, down, in, out, all around. And here's Prince speaking about that.
Most of the people that come see us now, they've been to see me umpteen times. And the only pity is when they bring their kids and they're trying to show their kids the experience they had. But I don't know how any of us grow if we just, you know, tread water. The idea is that we keep growing, and like we were saying before, is the fan base I have now, they're so sophisticated, they almost expect me to do the unexpected, mm-hmm. and that gives me a lot of room to challenge myself as well as them. Mm-hmm.
For sure. And on his biggest hits, he was always singing very passionately, and he was very playful with his sexuality and that seduction kind of bedroom eyes thing, I always feel. Very slick and sly, but yet sly. And I have to tell you, he addressed so many things. I mean, they were, you know, social issues of the time, racial things, of course, musical, cultural, all of those, with songs like Controversy. And one of the things, if you'll remember, with Darling Nikki, and we're going back here to 1984, and Shocked Tipper Gore. Oh, my. Yes, remember Darling Nikki. By the way, this was about self-pleasuring. You know what I'm saying.
Nikki, I guess you could say she was a sex fiend. I met her in a hotel lobby, masturbating with a magazine. She said, how'd you like to waste some time? And I could not resist when I saw little Nikki grind.
That's all Tipper Gore had to hear, the wife of then-Senator Al Gore. And, oh, my God, Prince just said masturbation to my kid. Nobody touches thyself. Not Nikki and not Tipper's kids. That doesn't happen. When she heard her daughter listening to it, she helped lead the formation of the Parents Music Resource Center, which eventually pressured all the record companies into labeling their albums to warn them of explicit content.
That's right.
How crazy was all of that?
I don't think
censorship.
I don't know that any one of those stickers on any CD or record or cassette tape back in the days probably dissuaded a single purchase.
No, it encouraged it.
I'm sure.
It encouraged it.
Backfire.
Of course. It's just like just say no. Yes, it encouraged it. I swear it really did. Because I remember, I mean, you know, that's exactly, you know, do the opposite when you're talking to kids. And so I don't think that, I wonder if that sticker thing is still going on, although it really doesn't matter now. I know that Apple's trying to put some sensor kind of program together. Well, yeah, they'll come up with an algorithm for parents.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that.
Right.
And it's digital
and they
have downloads. So, you know.
But talking about the music industry today, here's what Prince has to say about that.
Who's running the business now? Are the creatives running it? Are the suits running it? What's the state of the business?
Travis Smiley.
Days?
Well, that changed a long time ago when it became merely bottom line. You'll see, if you go back and you look at music, you'll see a big change when MTV came into the business. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that they're running it, but that sort of mentality is what is king now. It's not about content and substance. You know, hip-hop is very diverse, but if you only focus on one aspect of it, mm-hmm. then what you get is this image of Black America that is completely contrary to what actually goes on. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never seen you in a jogging suit. You know, you fit and trim, but look at how you're dressed. The gatekeepers, they know who they are. We don't need to name names, but rest assured, they aren't musicians. Mm-hmm. They don't have anything to do with music. If you sit one of them in the room and you ask them, what is it that you do? How did you get this job? A lot of them came from law. A lot of them came from accounting and things like that. They're merchants, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not to disrespect them or demean their role in any way, but at the same time, you can't expect them to know who they're signing and sort of gatekeep the music.
And that's true. Still to this day, that conversation was in 2009, and still today you will not find his catalog available on streaming services like Spotify. And boy, he took legal pressures and really went after all of his music on YouTube and elsewhere. He didn't want that stuff posted up there. And so, you know, if you're doing Google searches, and who hasn't today, especially in my business, trying to find content, it's just not really out there. So a lot of digging was to be done today to find his stuff. Because, and that was one of the great things. Now, if you were a fan and you were part of his fan base, that was very special. And people would talk about who were online with him on his personal site. If you would give your information to him, surprise packages would show up from Paisley Park. I mean, that's the kind of artist he was. And you would get get privileged seats at the concert, and you could get them there first, or he might send them to you. I remember all of these stories. Everybody always said, well, you know, if you really want to get information about Prince, you need to stay in touch today. I mean, you know, as of the days that we live in right now, in the moment, that's the way that you did it. 808-0810, we're taking phone calls. And what are your thoughts tonight as we look back on the life of Prince, who died at the age of 57? 808-0810. Mark in Oakland, good evening. You're on the Drex Radio Show on KGO.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, because I'm on a hands-free here. Oh, it's a sad day. I was shocked to hear this, but it's setting in, and I just wanted to share a little story of how Prince kind of touched my life, which I know I'm not alone on that. So when I think I was about 11, it was my first concert, the Purple Rain Tour. So the first time I ever saw live music was him. And I wanted to be him, basically. And I played out 1999, and then we were on to Purple Rain. So I was probably listening to him when I was like 8 or 7 or something. And I wanted to be him in a talent show. And I wanted to get a perm and dye my hair because I was a little redhead, freckle-faced kid. And my mom, and I argued with my mom so hard, and she wouldn't let me do it. She's like, you're not getting a perm and dyeing your hair. You could, you know, do something else. So that was just something I always think about. And he just had a big influence on me. I'm a musician. So he was amazing. And it's sad, and it's been cool. I love the clips you're playing, hearing it.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you taking the look back. And today you could get away with that purple hair. Yeah, you could pull it off.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to as an adult, but yeah, you could definitely get away with it. It's
I know. Now that I could do it, I think maybe that would be a good tribute.
we made the studio. Thank you very much for the call. We made the studio purple tonight, and Ed Lee is making City Hall purple tonight.
Yeah, at the suggestion of Johnny Funcheap.
Oh, great. We love Johnny. Yes, yeah. We'll talk to him tomorrow night.
Yeah.
All right, we're looking back, and actually we're hearing from the man himself, Prince, who died at the age of 57 today. Your thoughts and your, as you remember him, and what were you thinking when you heard the news today? 808-0810.
Finally my eyes are open, dreaming about you all night long. The only thing that I've been hoping for is for you to go to work. Blush, but I just wanted to tell you, I think you're great. I know you're late, but I need another taste. Breakfast can wait.
And that was the follow-up to the run-in with the Parents Music Center and the Music Resource Center and all of that, formed by Tipper Gore, the wife of then-Senator Al Gore, over the song Darling Nikki and the whole masturbation thing, forcing record companies to put explicit labels on everything. And he kind of faded back from the scene for a while. I mean, he was very coy, Prince was, about these sort of things. And that was the 2013 single, Breakfast Can Wait. But he never renounced any of those, you know, all that carnal fun.
Oh, no.
Why?
In fact, he conflated it with being, close to heavenly love or transcendent love, and that was very sexual love in a lot of his songs. And I just remember going, I don't know if he's got that right. My church wouldn't like that. But, boy, his songs sure did. He can still put the stank on it, you know?
Oh, right on, and I'll talk about that because we want to play some more audio from Prince, the man himself, on how people view him.
People are going to have different viewpoints of me depending upon which side of the fence they're sitting on. Mm-hmm. You know, like we were talking about the music industry, a merchant would have trouble being called a bean counter when in fact they know that's true. Mm-hmm. They'd be hard pressed though to try to sing a song with me. So I don't really care so much what people say about me because it usually is a reflection of who they are. For example, if people wish I would sound like I used to sound, then it says more about them than it does me. If I change the lyrics to a song, then it begs the question, why do you want me to curse? Why do you want me to talk like other people? See, cursing was cool when nobody was doing it, but just a couple people.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, like if everybody wears the same clothes,
right,
then it's, it ain't cool no more. You know, you're trying to be different. One can't be different by being racy today. It's not interesting anymore. See, sexiness was in the mind. It was in your imagination. When you lose that, then, like I said, it's just old skin.
Yeah.
Prince was always very vague about that, and but he got the sexy on, and you never really know, was he swinging left or was he swinging right? Which way was he going? And, we were talking about the run-in with Tipper Gore, and I have to tell you, back in the day, and it was 1985 FM in San Antonio, and we were so excited when we got the 12-inch extended play, the EP, for Erotic City. And that was back before, obviously, way before you could Google things and actually look at the lyrics. And my program director swore that the lyrics were, "We could funk until dawn," okay? But funk wasn't funk, according to the FCC. Of all radio stations, all the radio stations in America, they picked out KTFM in San Antonio. And I'll never forget, there were no big corporations back in the day. It was Mr. Waterman who owned this company. And oh my God, I will. Jeez, this is how one of the great memories I have of Prince, of just starting in the business, playing that song every night, thinking, I don't know, man, I'm not sure that's funk. And the FCC didn't see it that way either. And of all radio stations, I mean, of course, it was a huge monster radio station in Central Texas, They picked on us.
You guys were going to be the example.
Yes. I think they fined him, Mr. Waterman, I think $50,000. I'm not sure about that, but oh, ho, ho, ho. Yikes.
You don't want to funk with the FCC.
Yeah, well, you didn't want to funk with Mr. Waterman either.
No.
Yes, the scary days. That's one of the back, if we look at the backstory in my own personal life. Turns out it wasn't funk. If you Google the lyrics to Erotic City today, it ain't funk. So we are looking back on the life of Prince, who passed away today at the age of 57. And here he is talking about political views.
I think just the word political and politics and all that is just semantics. Mm-hmm. An equal share of economic wherewithal is desirable by all. I mean, we all just want to take care of our families and do it to the best of our abilities and see the world. People want to travel and things like that. A lot of people that I know haven't even been out of the United States.
And according to TMZ tonight, they are saying that Prince was treated for a drug overdose days before his death. Multiple sources say to TMZ that when he landed after coming back from his concert from Atlanta, he was rushed to a hospital and doctors gave him a safe shot, typically administered to counteract the effects of an opiate. Now, that's according to TMZ. Whether that was Narcan, I don't know. But their sources further say doctors advised Prince to stay in the hospital for 24 hours. His people demanded a private room, and when they were told that wasn't possible, they decided to bail. But, I'm not sure. There's a lot of radio silent going on today, obviously. But I'm not sure that makes any sense. Even if that were the case, here we are, 5 days later, if you were given the safe shot.
Yeah, I don't know that it would be.
That doesn't make it, that you would be, it would be over.
An event associated with it.
Right. But as I continue looking back on the man himself, he was a Jehovah's Witness. So there was, and I always perceived him as, he wasn't a drinker. And as far as I knew, he was not into drugs either. I mean, he was a very spiritual person.
I consider myself more of a spiritual person than I do political. I'm more concerned with the truth, I'm more concerned with why people won't adhere to it and why they see themselves as us against them. I used to think that we were the ones that came up with that. But see, we didn't start a lot of these wars. Mm-hmm. And we certainly don't want to go to them.
And I think one of the things that I know I was surprised today to hear this from this Travis Smiley interview from 2009, the whole, when he talks about epilepsy as a child, I never knew this.
I'm in sort of celebration mode mm-hmm. right now. I'm just thankful to be alive. I'm thankful to have the friends that I do and the teachers that I do. And I've spent the last year just playing when I feel like it. And I really looked forward to this time in my life. Mm-hmm. And I happened to come across that show, Unforgivable Blackness, and the story of Jack Johnson just moved me to no end. One of the reasons is that he had to deal with seemingly insurmountable odds all the time. Mm-hmm. If he would knock somebody down, people from the audience would get into the ring and pick him back up, so they could continue fighting.
Yeah.
And I just related to it in a lot of different ways. I was, I've never spoken about this before, but I was born epileptic. And I used to have seizures when I was young. And my mother and father didn't know what to do or how to handle it, but they did the best they could with what little they had. And my mother told me one day I walked into her and said, Mom, I'm not going to be sick anymore. And she said, why? And I said, because an angel told me so. Now, I don't remember saying it. That's just what she told me. And from that point on, I've been having to deal with a lot of things, getting teased a lot in school. And, early in my career, I tried to compensate for that by being as flashy as I could and as noisy as I could. And, I just looked again, I look forward to this time in my life when I could reflect back on it and talk to people like yourself, Dr. Cornel West. I mean, when you all come over to the house and we sit and we just talk about heavy things, I just become thankful.
Final concert from Atlanta a week ago. As the purple rain turns to purple tears today, as the doves cry, may they carry Prince to the wings of an angel. And we'll be back with more of the retrospective on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Drex on KGO 810.
Prince died today at the age of 57, but last night he dropped another single.
Doesn't raise a blaze, the memory.
Posted online.
Ooh, slippery lips of the bourgeoisie. Everybody step right up, come and see.
The bearded lady, take me up to G.
Bourgeoisie. All right. And great stuff. And you know, out at his compound at Paisley Park in Minnesota, there's a treasure trove of music. And we will, at someday when the estate wants to put it out, we will hear it. And I'm sure we'll be hearing it for years to come. A true musical genius lost today. And we want to continue with our retrospective look about, I talked about, you know, the battle that he went through. And by the way, one of the biggest battles he had was in the 90s with his label, Warner Brothers. Oh, my God, about how much output and how much music he was determined to release, Sign of the Times, which was 1987. It was a monumental album that addressed things like politics, religion, romance. It was, as I remember, I think it was a two-album set cut back from a triple. And he was in an open battle with Warner Brothers. And he was putting and releasing albums as rapidly as he could so that he could finish that contract. Remember when he became Symbol? And then, you know, the press, we weren't going to call him, or no one was going to call him Symbol, so he became the artist formerly known as Prince. And when he appeared with the word slave at the Grammys, complaining about the terms of his contract in 1993, he changed his stage name to that Symbol, only returning back to Prince in 1996 after Warner Brothers, you know, they ended the contract, or it ended, it expired. And he marked the change with of that triple album, independently released then on his brand new NPG album under his NPG label, Emancipation. So he was fighting the system. And here he is talking about regaining his confidence.
I taught myself how to play music, and I just stuck with it, and I did it all the time. And sooner or later, people in the neighborhood heard about me, and then they started to talk about me. And it wasn't in a teasing fashion. It was more like, wow, look what he can do. Mm-hmm. And there's something about having people around you giving you support that is, it's motivating. And once I got that support from people, then I believed I could do anything. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of really good teachers. My best friend, Andre Simone, his brother, Eddie, I'm entirely indebted to in this regard. He used to tell me, man, your songs are better than anybody's on the radio. You can do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I just kept rolling with it. Eventually, I went out to New York, and I got turned down my first time, but I just wasn't, you know, I felt like Jack Johnson then, too. Mm-hmm. I just wasn't going to be put down.
And I think what, for me, one of the razzle-dazzle moments of Prince's very storied career was the Super Bowl in 2007. I mean, you know, and no disrespect to Beyonce or Coldplay or any of the previous artists that have done it, but, you know, there was no... You know, boom, bang, shaboom. When he went on stage at the Super Bowl in 2007, the man just went out there with a guitar and played. And that was incredibly awesome to me. And then In 2008, he went to headline Coachella. And I mean, he was just into excellence. He just wanted to be the constant pursuit of perfection can be the enemy of excellence, but not so much for Prince.
Well, everybody's talented at something.
Right.
And that's what makes the world go round. We all need each other. And again, it's about good mentoring and good teachers. I had a lot of good people around. The other thing I have to point out, though, is that how can I put this? My father was, he was so hard on me. I was never good enough. And there was something about that, it was like, almost like the army when it came to music. It's like, that's not even close to, he'd say, it's not even close to what I'm doing. And he'd play again. And I could hear it. John Blackwell, my drummer, he's same way. His father taught him the same way. We learn like that. We learn from being shown. It doesn't come from books and just reading it. We need to be shown, you know. So it's just having really good teachers and a bar that's so high, you know, Tiger Woods. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm.
And as he crossed all of those, and he was a unifier, I think, of dualities, racial, and we talked about this, sexual, musical, and cultural. But, you know, one of the things that was very interesting and was asked in this 2000 Travis Smiley interview was the fact that he was not voting.
I think from him being so hard on me, that the one thing I got out of it is I understood that in his harshness, he wanted me to excel. Mm-hmm. He used to say things like, don't ever get a girl pregnant. Don't ever get married, you know. Don't this, don't that. When he'd say these things, I didn't know what to take from it. So I would create my own universe. Uh-huh. And my sister's like that. A lot of my friends are like that, the ones that I still have, you know, early musicians and things like that. Creating your own universe is the key to it, I believe, you know, and letting all the people that that you need occupy that universe.
And that was Prince speaking of about his father, obviously. But this next clip, he talks about not voting.
Well, reason why is because I'm one of Jehovah's Witnesses, and we've never voted. And that's not to say that I don't think Barack Obama, President Obama, is a very smart individual, and he seems like he means well. Prophecy is what we all have to go by now. It's very interesting. I did a sold-out concert in London. We played 21 nights in a row, and all the concerts were sold out. When I would watch television over there, and you'd see the United Nations feed, the direct feed from the United Nations, mm-hmm. you'd hear them talk a lot about religion. You'd hear the Bible mentioned constantly. This is not what we're used to in the United States. It's almost as though there's no need for God and no need for religion and justice in politics. So there's supposed to be a separation of church and state over here. We can't have a separation of state and morality, though. And you know, songs like Dreamer and even Feel Good, it's the same thing.
And there you have it. And boy, I'll tell you, how strong is that? That's from 2009, Prince addressing. And you have to wonder what he thought about today's presidential election. And as we wrap up this hour, this is a song, well, it is Reflection, with Wendy, who is part of the New Revolution Band. Let's take a listen.
Dance together like Tom Definite
from 2004.
Try to catch the glass before it falls. Without a frown, can you turn up the stereo?
to play you this old song. It's about love. Can I do that? Did we remember to water the plants today? I forgot to look up at the moon because I was too busy. Yes, I was too busy. Too busy. Nice to know that when bodies wear out, we can get another.
Prince, who defined an entire generation, or maybe two, or maybe three, died at the age of 57. May he rest in peace. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose.